Hey, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Right. So good to see everyone. We're going to be looking at journaling as a coaching and transformational tool today. I'm very excited. It's going to be a very interactive call. We're going to do lots of brainstorming. There's going to be a lot of creativity coming through. It's almost going to be, today's call is kind of like a practicum in a way, and you'll see what I mean as we get into it. But before we do, a couple of pieces. After today, we have just two more calls. That's it. So next week, we have a practicum. And then the week after, and this is what I want to note, it's our last call, and it's a 3-hour call. So we are meeting, and this should be in your calendars, but just as a reminder, we are starting at 11 Eastern and then going through to our regular end time, 2 p.m. Eastern. Our last call is a really, best way to say it, it's a big call. There's a lot in it. It's kind of like a combo of, we're going to be looking at what I call next steps calls, which is when you come to, the end of a coaching cycle with a client, what is the process to take them through to support them to make an aligned decision about continuing with you? I take you through it step by step, and it's really, really valuable. And then we also look at one of my very favorite topics, ritual as a coaching and transformational tool. And it seems we might be like, those are oddly placed together, but somehow by the end, we magically bring it all together in order to just beautifully, beautifully close our container. And so if you haven't yet put aside that 11 to 2 p.m. time in 2 weeks from now, please do note it on your calendar. It's a really good one to be live for. What else did I want to mention? Every now and again, I get to bring a guest speaker in to the Sacred Depths community. Usually it's a graduate of the program who has just information to share that's relevant to what we learn in Sacred Depths or to what I think your needs are. And I'm in the process of scheduling one. It's not going to be until after Sacred Depths is over, but because it'll probably be in December, it's close enough that I wanted to bonus you all into it. It's going to be with Kara Jones, who is a Sacred Depths and Advanced Depth and Into the Depths graduate. She is doing incredible work around how to use your authentic story in your marketing. It's really deep work. Actually, a whole bunch of my team members have taken her programs too. It's like really that good. So you'll be getting an invite to that. She'll be sharing a lot of great information, and she's just kind of a wonderful person to know, and someone who is soon you're going to be a Sacred Depths graduate too. So someone in the colleague community with you. Last piece that I want to mention before we jump in is at some point over the next couple of weeks, I don't know exactly when, we'll be sending out to you a request for a testimonial if you feel called to write one. And it'll have all of the instructions on it, et cetera. And of course, you're not obligated at all to write a testimonial. But I put the invitation out there and I'm bringing it up here with you now to just kind of like make the request voice to voice from my heart. If you have received value from our time together, it would just mean so much to me for you to either write a testimonial or create a video testimonial. Some of you have already done it spontaneously over the last 10 months, and I thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. But it would just mean so much to me if you were willing to share about your experience and what you've received. For two reasons. First and foremost, because I really do take it in. I am not above saying I need validation sometimes, and I do just take it into my heart, and it means so much to me. And then the other reason is because I am a referral-based business. And even beyond that, your words really matter when someone is considering stepping into sacred depths, social proof, and just words from people who have taken it about their experience are just really, really helpful. So anyway, that invite will go out to you. I don't know when, and it's more than one invite because following up is important in case you forget. But I just also wanted to kind of make that request from my heart. And of course, as always, I am not attached to outcome either. If it's not right or aligned for you to share a testimonial, I love you still. Okay. So with all of that, let's start to take a look at journaling. Journaling is really such a highly effective tool for self-awareness and for transformation and for growth and for goal achieving. You've seen it over and over again over the last 10 months. We've used journaling in different ways here in Sacred Depths. And I wait until the end of the program, the training, to look at journaling in the way that we're going to look at it today, because it brings together so many of the skills and the tools and the techniques that we've looked at over the last 10 months. So it's also just like a great opportunity to continue to integrate and go deeper with everything that we've learned and then add new pieces and brainstorming and creativity. Probably some of you know this already, but I'll just share. Journaling isn't for everyone. And the way we're going to look at journaling today, by the way, isn't just with words. And you'll see what I mean as we get further into it. But, what I just kind of do want to share by way of, inspiration, I guess, is the role that journaling has played in my own life and in my own business. So I've actually kept a journal since I've been about 6 years old. I still have all of my many dozens of journals from the last decades, including that first one. And it has, I feel emotion even kind of just like talking about it. It has really, throughout my life, it's kind of been my internal coach in a way. It's been my space holder. It's held containers for me, not just for deeper self-awareness, but for regulating my nervous system, for connecting in with my soul, for connecting in with my deepest being, for creating clarity, for it's been a tool for loving myself also. It's been so many things for me. That very first journal, I actually started writing the year that my mother started to have her multiple sclerosis symptoms. And it got me through that at that age in my life. It really was like a saving grace for me. So I share this with you kind of with tears welling up in my eyes, just to say, it can be such a gift. It can be such a gift. And I'm sure many of you have a journaling practice as well. We're going to kind of be looking at creative ideas around it today. Okay, and how we use it in our client work. So, okay, what is the purpose of journaling in our one-on-one client work? We're not going to touch group work on this because you can use it in different ways in group work. We're going to kind of like stick with one-on-one for today. It's similar but different. Anyway, mostly you want to use journaling in your one-on-one work for homework. We'll get to that in a moment. You want to mostly use it for homework. Every now and again, you may use it during actual session time. And the every now and again that I use it during actual one-on-one session time is if my client needs a pattern interrupt, or if a client is having trouble, kind of the best way to say it is clearing their head. So what I mean by this, by a pattern interrupt, is sometimes if the conversation is going along and it's like very outward focused and logistics, and the client is maybe having a little trouble sinking into themselves and their soul and their inner world, from their head to their heart, journaling, you know, you can use visualization also, but journaling is another way to support a client to move from their head into the heart space or the soul space or the body space. Alternatively, it can also be used if the client needs a pattern interrupt from too much heart or too much inner to bring them into their head as well. That's when you can use list making or like kind of writing out strategy or words or that kind of thing. So it can be used either way. But mainly I like to use journaling for homework. And I use it for a couple of different reasons with homework. Number one, to go deeper on certain topics that we looked at in the session. Number two, for integration and reinforcement of breakthroughs that came through in the session. Number three, for reinforcement and integration and practice of new learnings that came through in a session. Sometimes I'll use journaling for pieces that like started to come through in a session, but we didn't have time to go more deeply into them, but it feels like relevant for right then and there and not to wait till the next session. I'll use journaling for that purpose. I'll use journaling for pieces that came up, but they need more processing. They weren't fully baked yet. And then I'll also give journaling homework for pieces that I sense might be really, really personal for my client, that they might want to explore with themselves first before sharing with me. So I'll use journaling, and again, we'll see, like it's very broad when I say journaling. There's a big definition for it. It's not just one thing. I'll use it for all of these reasons. It's a place where you can get really creative. It's not just about asking questions and have clients journal on it, although it can be that, but it can be drawing, it can be mind mapping, it can be diagram making, it can be art making, it can be list making, it can be internal dialoguing, and more, right? But just to kind of stir the cauldron for us on this, it can really be so many things. There are very few rules, if you will, when it comes to journaling as homework, but I want to share some kind of rules or guardrails that I've learned over the years that are really helpful for clients. Number one, whatever journaling homework that gets assigned, it shouldn't take up too much time. If it takes up too much time, it's not going to be done. It's just going to like feel overwhelming and the client isn't going to get to it. It also shouldn't take up too little time. It shouldn't be like a 90-second or 2-minute thing. Something the client can like sink their teeth into it, right? So finding that kind of appropriate, what's appropriate for them. I like to remind the client to actually carve out some quiet time and space for themselves to do the homework, like not to just do it, you know, on the subway kind of thing, but to make it soul time for themselves, to create a container for themselves if they want to light a candle to hold the space or journal in a special place. Like I know for me, I have special places where I journal, and then I would never journal at my desk, for example, because it's too, like my desk is too like computer and work and let's just get the things done kind of thing. I need to like move into a soul environment. And I find that's true for my clients as well to get the most out of the journaling homework. Another, you know, rule or guardrail or suggestion, if you will, is whatever the work is, I ask the client to take the time after the writing or after the drawing or after whatever they've done to read over or look it over afterwards and then list out some of their takeaways from it to kind of integrate that. And then I like to follow up on it. So either over email, I'll ask them to shoot me an email and let me know what comes from the homework, or follow up with it in the next session or follow up with it in the prep form for the next session so that I can be brought into the picture so that they can further process and integrate. It is almost always valuable for a client in one way or another to be seen and heard in the revelations that come through in the homework and to be witnessed in it. Even if you don't have full discussions on it, like even if it's over email, that's the next layer of integrating what's come through. If you don't like journaling, which some people don't, there's a good chance that your ideal client might not like journaling either. So again, like we're looking at this as broader than just asking questions and writing answers to it. We're going to get into a lot more detail, but let me pause there for a moment because I've been talking a lot. What's feeling important or exciting for you so far? What are you seeing so far? Anyone want to share? Brenda.
I like that journaling isn't just answering questions.
Wait, I didn't have my sound on. Hold on. Start again.
I like that journaling isn't just answering questions in writing. I like that it included a lot of other things, and I'm curious to hear those other things because I personally don't enjoy journaling at all.
Yeah, we're going to get to all of those. Good. Deva.
I agree with Brenda, and then I really like the emphasis of making it soul time and not to do it at your desk and to have a more sacred container to be in touch with the deeper aspects of what the assignment is. So that's really cool.
Yeah, the environment, as we know, the environment, the container can make all the difference in terms of our willingness to kind of sit and be patient and connect in and open up and our nervous systems, all of that. So I find that that's an important piece. Good. Ayana.
Yeah, I love what you're saying about witnessing, being witnessed in your revelations. I used to journal multiple times a day, and I burned all these journals that I had done years ago. And then I haven't journaled since then, because it took like 2 weeks of bonfires because I had enough journals to build a house. And I was like, what's the point? But it's been coming to my mind a lot. And after you saying this, I thought, yeah, for the internal coach and the internal clarity and all that, you know, I'm like, who cares? Even if I burn it afterwards, it's like just to have that process for myself. So thank you.
Yeah. And you're welcome.
I said for clients too, but I was thinking about myself first.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, yes, part of my stealth mission, as you know, with everything in Sacred Depths, like we're learning skills for clients, but one of my many stealth missions is like to inspire you to have space for yourself as well. Marianne.
I'm on and off with journaling personally. Like when I do it, it's such a powerful integration. And I feel like I'm very kinesthetic too. So there's something about taking the pen and like downloading things from spirit or whatever you believe things come from. But I don't always do it. So partly the conversation here is like recognizing my own resistance to something that's truly transformational for me and for clients. I will say that I have used some journaling stuff with clients before, and it is powerful integration, and like ego dialogue type stuff is something that I've used a lot. And what I'm hearing here today that I'm really excited about though, that it's like, oh, I never thought of it that way, as like an extension of the coaching conversation, right? Like you said, if you run out of time or you have to honor the time of the container, but there's something that you're just starting to crack open. I love the idea of like, don't panic. This could be carried over to a journaling assignment in a way. So, yes. You know, the operations geek in me is like, oh, this is an efficiency too. That's so exciting. it's like depth plus efficiency. So anyway, I love that idea. And I really hadn't thought of it in that frame and also there is that very important, sometimes strike while the iron is hot and something's unfolding in the moment.
That's
right. And whether or not the time runs out, you know, being able to have them integrate deeper. So lots of processing going on over here for me, but I love the topic. It's awesome. Thanks.
Yeah, no, good. And I want to pull on the two pieces that you shared because they're both so important. So the second one, you know, so much of this is also about the fact that, and this is why this is another big reason for not one-off sessions, but series of sessions, right? We're not just holding session by session for our clients. The value is in the bigger container and the work that happens in between sessions because a bigger container is being held. And so we do, like, things can spill over in between, and they should sometimes. And then to this piece about being inconsistent with journaling, just to normalize that, no myth of perfection over here. I teach this, and it's so funny. Last week, I led one of the advanced depth intensives. We did 2 days on dream work and working with archetypal images. And so much of it is about like writing and journaling and drawing. It's like such deep stuff. And I was sharing with them, it's like, you know, I teach this in same here. I teach this and I go through my own phases, right? And I can see so clearly the times that I go through when I'm consistent with my soul work and I'm consistent with my journaling are the times that I feel more regulated and I feel more connected to myself and I feel more on purpose and the outside things don't get to me as much. And I feel like I know myself better. It's just, it is a fact. And part of it, aside from content, is just about having the regulating container for ourselves, which we need a lot of in this day and age, right? Annalise.
it's a really interesting subject because you said you started when you were six. I think I started around maybe 8 or 9, and I regularly journaled. And then I, for 20 years, I haven't done any journaling when I was a lawyer. And then I've started again, but very, very unregularly on an app. And I know, and I would want to know more because just writing on like a book or whatever, I'm just scared that people, if I'm honest, they're going to read it, you know, my kids, my husband or whoever. So I'm like, how do I, so that sort of like secrecy, this is just for myself and I don't want other people. So I do it in this app. Yeah. Unregularly, because it's not the same, because writing has got a magic in it rather than just on an app. But if I write, someone is going to read it and I don't want people to read it. And also I'm absolutely interested in understanding how to help clients with that. And, you know, that's, I've never done it. So this is like, you know, incredibly precious for me if I can integrate it into my practice.
Yeah. I'm excited for us to look more deeply. I agree with you. I mean, that is may not be true for everybody's body and system, but typing for me, and I do a lot of writing and typing and all of that, but it's not the best thing, the best words I have for it. It doesn't feel that soul connection as when I'm not with any technology at all, and I'm in a really sacred space and I'm writing in a journal. It's just such a different feeling.
But how do you sort of like, do you lock it with a lock? Oh,
so yeah, I was going to say that. So, you know, I can't give all the solutions because I don't know, every family is different. But what I will say is that I've just established over the years the importance of having, to my kids, my husband, like the importance of having a space for reflections and how that is sacred and private. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, for me, it's to the point where I can leave my journal anywhere and my family, they're not going to pick it up and read it. Wow. It's just like a family code. That may not go for every family, but it's been like an education, and they see how I hold it. And then they also see how I honor their privacy too, right? Like, not to get into so many parenting things, but I don't open my daughter's door until I knock first, right? And that's like a, so we have those kind of established sacred privacy things in the household.
Amazing. Thank you.
Kelly, I'm going to take Kelly and then we're going to keep on going.
And I'll be quick, just a couple of things. One, with what Annalise was saying, I can totally relate. And right before we did our move, I found all these old journals and I was like, oh, if somebody ever found these. I was like blessing that by making sure those were not the boxes that got lost in the move. but I've been journaling forever, and it's been like best friend and guide and tracker. And what was interesting, just kind of randomly opening up some of my old journals, and I've gotten rid of lots of them. I haven't done the bonfire, but I love that idea, Yana. But just looking at lots of them, like to be able to see old patterns and themes, and also ways that, you know, some patterns where I'm like, really, we're still stuck there. And then other patterns that I'm like, oh, wow, I was really young and had these awarenesses that I didn't realize had come to, I thought these were more recent, like older Kelly. And then one thing that I have found really helpful with clients, and I had I had just had journaling be a part of my regular client practice. And so I send out to them weekly online journal prompts. And it's just a thing that I have set to go every week. Many of them don't use it, but some do. And what I have found and what I encourage in them is that when people do the work and then they go back and look at them, they see how far they've come. And that is just amazing. And then if I go, and I love when they share them, I tell them you can write in your own thing, like this is really for you, or if you want, you know, to share with me. So I'm holding space with you or just for witnessing. But I just love going back and seeing the evolution. And it's like the evidence is right there. And it's like something that you can't track as easily when you're in the everyday change. So I love them for that reason.
It's so true. It's so powerful. And that way it in very much the same way as having a coach that tracks you over time that can point out, actually, you aren't approaching this the way you used to, right? Or like, this is what has shifted. Or and so it is so much fun, sometimes a little cringy and also so much fun to go back and read. Okay, good, good. So let's keep on going. I just pulled the wrong notes here. Hold on. So you all know I like to put things in buckets, my Virgo brain. And so I put kind of everything we're talking about today kind of in two buckets. The first bucket, which we'll spend a little time on, is what I'd call ongoing journaling practices, some persistent and consistent ways that you and clients can journal consistently. And then bucket number two or category number two are like specific instances, like when things come up in a coaching session, and then the specific homework you want to give for that week. But let's look at the consistent journaling practices first. So what I've come to learn, which was kind of shocker to me at first, because I am a journaler, but what I've come to learn is that persistent and consistent journaling practices are not necessarily right for every client. So for some people, it is just not going to be right for them to have an ongoing journaling practice. So the ongoing journaling practice, you'd really suggest to clients who have the space and the willingness to do that kind of longer term, consistent inner work on their own. Like that's they feel really called to that. And we've already spoken about so many purposes of kind of like an ongoing, persistent journaling practice: connection with self, connection with spirit, connection with heart, regulation, connection with soul, etc. It could be just a general, right? Like they come to their journal every day, or there can be a specific practice. And I'm sure many of you have some, and I want to hear from you, but I'll just start to toss some ideas for specifics first. So number one, like an ongoing from Margaret Julia Cameron, morning pages, right? So maybe for your client or yourself, it's just really helpful at the beginning of each day to kind of just dump like anything that's going on, to just get it on the paper for 5 minutes, for 10 minutes, so that it doesn't have to be swirling in your head or causing anxiety or kind of just like stuck in there for the day. That's one example of an ongoing persistent journaling practice. Another one that's similar that I was doing for a while is just in the morning or at any point during the day, starting a prompt with "today I am," "today I am," and just free write from that place, whatever wants to come through. This isn't even necessarily about getting insights, although insights will come. Again, it's about having just that space in the container to be with yourself, to feel into yourself, to locate yourself for the day. When we can locate ourselves for the day in that calm way, it's like so much more flow can happen, so much more regulation for the day. Another example of an ongoing practice, I'm sure some of you have this practice, is a gratitude journal. What am I grateful for today? As a way of, sometimes these this category of the ongoing practices are about building muscles on something that we've started with our clients in a session. So if we know, for example, in a session that a client, like only sees the bad, right? And we've unpacked it. We've maybe done some rewiring negative thought patterns on it or whatever it is. And then we want them to go deeper into now building this muscle of seeing some more of the positive and or feeling gratitude, et cetera. Having a positivity journal or a gratitude journal where daily they list out things that they're grateful for, things that have gone well. Another example of this is maybe we're working with a client on them being able to more deeply celebrate themselves and acknowledge themselves and own all the ways that they're moving forward, right? Maybe they have a tendency to just really their inner critic themselves, as many of us do. After we've unpacked this over a session or two, we may want to see if it's right for them to have a daily celebrations journal where it's both for the moment to celebrate that day, to see what there is to celebrate, and then to build that muscle over time. For a while, I had an ongoing practice that was really beautiful. Maybe I'll pick it back up at some point, where at the end of each day, I listed three things I wanted to celebrate from the day, three things from the day I was grateful for, any learning, anything I learned that day, inner or outer learning. Like, for example, I learned that, you know, I don't really like to work out hard, you know, like, because an easier workout is better for me, right? Like, anything that you've learned. I learned I shouldn't have this particular conversation with my husband when we're both tired and not in the mood for it, right? Whatever it is. So list out learnings. And then I would always top it off with one thing from the day that I want to release and an intention for the next day, right? So that was kind of like a nice little ongoing practice to have. One of my ongoing practices, sometimes consistent, sometimes not, dream work, working with my dreams. And I have a very specific protocol that I use to get really into the deeper archetypal meanings of my dreams. My life is always so much richer when I'm doing that. I'd love to hear some more ideas. What are some of your persistent journaling practices, either that you do or you've heard of or that this conversation is sparking for you? Who wants to share? Deva.
Hi. Yeah, I love the end of day gratitudes and beginning of day. And then from Monica Shaw's work, I've also gotten a lot out of what am I tolerating and or avoiding? Yes. Because that consistency of like, oh my God, I'm still avoiding this, mm-hmm. and just writing it. It's like, all right, I really need to get a hand on that. And then maybe it's like, why am I avoiding it? And why has it been 2 weeks I'm avoiding or whatever it is. Helps to see the shadow or the things that we might otherwise keep avoiding.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. So true. It's like great. It's a great coaching question to ask in a session. What are you tolerating right now or avoiding? But then having that practice to see like, oh, that's coming up again and again and again. Oh, still avoid, right? That can help move the needle on things. Good. AJ.
Realizing that I love journaling, but I don't get to that every day. And I've made sort of a bullet journal type checklists for every day where was I grounding? Was I offering love to friends, to family? Was I, you know, did I exercise? Like, how's my mood? How's my energy? And those types of things that in, you know, when it comes to months at a time, I can see shifts and patterns. That kind of feels like kind of feels like this sort of practice.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you're bringing that into the mix. Panina actually introduced me to bullet journals a couple of years ago. She was really into, and you can get so creative and make them. And then
what
right. But what I also want to add to what you're saying is those kinds of consistent questions, and even what Deva was sharing, we can ask our clients to track them. And then if it makes sense, we can add them those questions to their pre-call forms as well, so that they can report to us on it, so that we can hold it with them in our coaching containers as well. And I've done that, you know, lots of different times with clients. And it may not be ongoing, but if a client wants to start a meditation practice, as an example, we might add that to the pre-call form until it gets regular for them. Like, how many times over the last week have you meditated? How has it gone? Etc. Cecil.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, because there are some practices that might border tracking. So here I'm thinking about cyclical kind of menstrual tracking journal practices, that it can also be sort of more sleep or energy levels, these kind of things. And of course that, so the menstrual cycle tracking might be very specific to that kind of work. But anyhow, the way, for instance, emotional literacy, body literacy, and yeah, it can also be dreams, like how things, they change according to where you are in your cycle, and that we can apply to many cycles, as you so beautifully put out. There's also something in understanding actually our inherent changes in rhythm and being.
Yes, 100%. So tracking the menstrual cycles, tracking how we feel, either through menstrual cycles or through the cycles of the moon, the different phases, or the cycles of the year.
Even the day.
Yeah, even the day, throughout the day, can be so helpful. And then this idea of tracking, just even beyond the cycles, can be so useful, because it creates awareness in the moment or soon thereafter of a tendency. So we've looked at this a little bit, you know, in rewiring negative thought patterns. You know, one of the things that I suggest is to have clients track, once you support them to become aware of the negative thought patterns, track that over the next week or two. Start to call yourself out on it. You know, the tracking creates deeper awareness. And then the more awareness you have, the more choice you have to change something.
Yeah, and also to read when things are going to happen, because you know that you get the pattern.
Anticipate, yes, absolutely. Good, thank you. Hey, Jolly, and then I'm going to read some pieces in the chat, and then we're going to keep on going.
Can you hear me okay? I never know if these are working. So one of the things, this is kind of like in the spirit of don't read, like read good news, not like all the news. One thing that I find really, really helpful is that, you know, life comes at us at such a fast pace, and there's always so much that comes up that we didn't necessarily plan for. So writing an achievement, like you have a to-do list, but the way I don't have that satisfaction that people have, like crossing the to-do list out. So instead of doing that, it's what did you achieve today? Yeah. Because so often there are things that we achieve that wasn't on the to-do list.
Yes.
And so that's actually been so helpful for me, because it shows me that I do actually do a lot.
Yes. I love it. I love it. Absolutely. It's like all these little things that we do that we just take for granted, but it's actually like, no, I did that, right? I got the food shopping done today. I organized the drawer. I sent that email to that client, but those aren't like the big, even like the big to-dos on the, but there's like, wow, a lot in this day, right? Good. Thank you. Okay. I feel like there were some cues. Angela's saying oracle cards, yes, to start reflections and journaling, absolutely. Michaelin, I think the question you asked, so celebrations, gratitudes, learnings, one thing from the day I want to release, and then an intention for the next day. Okay, we can spend hours and hours and hours on this, but we only have 45 minutes left, so I'm going to keep on going. Let's look at the second category that I mentioned, which is giving journaling homework for like specific, the specific thing came out of the session, right? And so what kind of, what are homework are we going to give for it? We can't be exhaustive in this because for as many coaching sessions, topics there is as many homework assignments. But what I've done is I've created some case study scenarios that I'm going to share with all of you. I'm going to share the case study with you. And then my invitation to you is to write out like what's some homework that you would give this person. Don't just stick to writing, right? Journaling. We're going to talk a lot about ritual in 2 weeks from now, but if you want to bring ritual into it, that's fine too, right? Like what would you give this client, suggest for this client between this session and the next? So here's case study number one. In a session, your client shares that she hasn't done any of the action steps that the two of you strategized out the session before. She's working on a business and it's a logo design business. She's a graphic designer. She designs logos. And the two of you had strategized steps that she could take for her to bring on clients. This is the second session in a row that this has happened, that she hasn't taken any of the action steps. And when you look at this together more deeply, you see that a few things are at play. Some pieces come up in the session. Number one, this client didn't quite have enough time in her schedule to complete all of the action steps. She definitely had time to do some of them, but it becomes clear that she didn't have quite enough time to do all the things. And then another piece that comes up in the session as you look more deeply is that she's had some fear and resistance about being so visible. So in the session, when this comes up in the session, you did together a befriend your fear process around her fear of visibility. And she connected deeply with a time when her first boyfriend made fun of her for wanting to become a famous artist. She was able to see through that befriend your fear process that she perceived that the perceived rejection from her boyfriend made her feel ashamed of her creativity and made her feel nervous to let others know that she wanted to make a business out of her creativity. The higher level message that came through in the BYF process that her fear gave her was trust your creatrix, trust your inner creatrix. And that's about where the session is, you know, ending. You've got a couple minutes left. And so you want to give her some homework to go deeper between now and the next session. I'll give y'all a minute or two. What homework, what journaling homework, broad definition of journaling, might you suggest for this client for her to go deeper and to integrate some of the learnings that came out of the session. Take a minute or two, and then let's not share in the chat. I'd love to hear voices on this. You get to integrate everything that we've learned over the last 10 months into some homework assignment. All right, who would like to share? And we'll do like one at a time so different people have, so, you know, different people can share. So what's a homework assignment you might give her? Ayana.
One could be for her to journal about every positive moment that she's experienced from expressing her creativity.
Mm. She
touched somebody or had a wonderful feeling as a result of being creative.
I love that. I love that, to like identify and then journal on moments where she's had just such a positive experience from sharing her creativity with others. Beautiful. Good. Amy.
I came up with drawing a picture of the creatrix and then writing to yourself from the voice of the creatrix.
Yes.
And then also another idea to go back to that time with her boyfriend and write out a dialogue that would rewrite that story. That would be a different way that she with the power of her creatrix would have responded to him at the time.
Beautiful. Yeah. So let me kind of take that piece by piece for everyone. So drawing an image of the inner creatrix, so connecting with that archetypal energy that came through at the end of the session, right, of that creatrix as a way of supporting the client to more deeply pave the neural pathways of the connection with the inner creatrix, to see when we draw, it's we use our hands, that's the activating the body level of going deeper with it. And then she has this image to see. And then from there, she can more deeply connect to that archetypal energy of her inner creatrix and write, like, what do you want me to know? Right. And then journal from the voice. And then I love this idea of that you can take that energy, that new energy that's being embodied of the creatrix, and how would she dialogue differently with the boyfriend? Good. Kelly.
I kind of feel like I should put my hand down. Mine's really similar, but I will just give a couple of tweaks on that, because that was exactly mine, was to speak with both of the younger part that felt the hurt from the boyfriend, and then the creatrix as well. Just a couple variations on that that occurred to me is, one, to check in with that younger part that feels ashamed and rejected, and to ask what needs to be seen and witnessed, and also what needs healing. And I would often do this in a soul retrieval kind of way. So like, it could be, but without time, I think the journaling would be really great, or to go walk and just feel in the body, like what's coming up, and then journal on that. And then also write from the voice of the creatrix. And what had popped into me was to do it with a non-dominant hand, because sometimes that's helpful just to get out of that rational brain, tucky, 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 and be able to access different parts of her own power and wisdom and spirit guides or what have you. So,
yes, I love it. I'm so glad you didn't take your hand down, Kelly. We each have our own takes that are so helpful for all of us to hear, right? So, and we didn't really talk about that inner child piece yet, right? So, supporting the client to dialogue with the inner child, or even to dialogue with her, however old she was, I think I had said teenager, and I don't remember what, with the boyfriend, right? To just that part of herself, and tell that part what she didn't know at that point, and reassure her and hear from that part and create that container for her, could be such a beautiful way of continuing to work with it. And then I love this idea of using the non-dominant hand as well. We'll get, because it's other side of the brain, we'll get different pieces coming through with that. Beautiful. Who else? What are some other ideas? Don't be shy.
Joanna, can I add one more piece?
Yeah.
I love to have people create altars, but sometimes what I'll do is if there's just a piece that's coming up. So like, let's say the creatrix shows up, for her to have some symbolic piece, and it's often like a stone or a trinket or something, that I have her blow in the energy of that, that archetype, and to hold it and like touch it every day or talk with it. It's just a really nice anchoring in place where people can go and touch into the energy of that. And likewise with the more wounded parts, sometimes they just need attention and want space to be seen and heard and witnessed. So that's another thing. Just because you said we can be more creative. So I'm just adding that into the mix.
I'm so glad. Yes, I'm so glad that you are. You're getting into some ritual, infusing a ritual object with the energy of the creatrix or even the wounded parts, and really like having that as a reminder and a talisman and like a touchstone back to the energy of it. Even just like keeping that on your desk, then as you go through your work for the day, connecting in with that creatrix energy. Good. Who else? What else did you come up with? There's no right one right answer here. So many different possibilities. Anyone else want to share? Cecil.
I can share for the purpose of learning, because I didn't feel like I came up with that good questions. And maybe also I didn't get the full picture of the case study, but they were, my questions were more related with, for instance, like, how has the perceived rejection of your boyfriend affected your life? I'm thinking maybe what I got into was more the sort of like grief of what did not happen from then on. So how has it been holding you back, and how is it holding you back now? This kind of, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Absolutely. Okay. There's no, like I said, there's no one way. Those are beautiful questions, either in the session or for journaling afterwards, to go deeper with and to really be with, and like to have that week or 2 weeks to meditate on what are all of the ways that this has now impacted me? How have I been holding this as I've moved through the last decade or however long it's been since that interaction with that boyfriend? Yes, beautifully done.
Yeah, there's a lot of unexpressed creativity.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good. I love it. Deva.
I think I just was thinking to come more directly to the action steps, since it's the second session that she's been avoiding them, and to revisit that, the action steps, and to maybe do a mind mapping exercise around it, or coming back to what would your higher self want you to know about these action steps, and where do they need to be tweaked so that she's not shaming herself around not doing it? Because I immediately was like, oh, that's me, and immediately feel shame when I don't do something, especially if it's the second time and there's someone who's holding me accountable. And so to have a practice of looking, does that time need to be longer to give, or does she need to take something off the list, or to have asked, where could she ask for help in getting done something around? So what it is she's avoiding on them.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. I think you may have also just come up with a practice for yourself. Just saying. So mind mapping the different outer actions that she would like to take. And then for each one, asking, what does my higher wisdom want to know about this? And what does my higher wisdom want to know about this? And what about the timing for this one, higher wisdom, right? And I think it's helpful in so many ways. It helps to get it organized. It helps to bring through the higher wisdom. It helps to like reinforce like, yes, I want to take this action, and maybe then be more inspired to take it as well. Nicely done.
And to unpack like maybe some of it's not necessary, or
some of it might be
order or different timeline.
I love it. By the way, I love the pumpkins in your background. I feel like you've got a pumpkin patch in your Lara.
One thing that occurred to me is when you're working with people who are creative and, you know, very accustomed to drawing and very confident with their hands, is if they're experiencing a block, maybe to move into a different realm and have them explore, like, maybe through movement. So coming up with, you know, what does a movement look like or a dance look like of the creatrix when she is in her full power? And really remembering, almost like a physical mantra, whenever you're in that place of doubt or you're going into those negative spaces, to remember what she looks like in her full power as a movement, as a dance.
Yes, beautiful. I love it. And there's like a couple different ways you can do that. So one, without music, you can ask the client to just like connect, like you said, connect into the energy of the creatrix, like start in stillness, connect into the energy of the creatrix, maybe see her and then move, right? Like how does the energy of the creatrix want to move? Another way you could do it is say like, what's your creatrix favorite song, right? That you have on Spotify or whatever it is, like, what would she dance to? And then the invitation is to put that song on and then move from that energy as well. Beautiful. Who else? What other ideas are out there? These are all so good. Please don't feel shy to share your ideas. Anyone else want to share on this one? All right, let me take a look at my notes. I think you all hit a bunch of things that I had here. There's a couple of other variations. Instead of the dialogue with the boyfriend, she could also write a letter that she wouldn't send to the boyfriend from what she knows now. She could write a letter to her teenage self. Because she is a graphic designer, logo maker, you could invite her to create a logo that symbolizes this, how she wants the visibility in her business, or that symbolizes the creatrix, right? Like create a logo for this piece of awareness for herself. And then of course there might be some time work. Remember I mentioned there was the time piece in there. So some homework around blueprinting out the actions to see where they could actually fit in to her schedule. All right. Should we do another case study? Try another one. You are working with a client, helping them set aligned boundaries for themselves. Through this work that you're doing together on boundaries, your client really realizes that she's been a doormat in a lot of her relationships. She overgives. She takes over responsibility for others. She allows others to be critical of her or take advantage of her. And as those awarenesses come through, as you go deeper in session, you uncover that she has a fear of others being angry at her. And because she's got this fear of others being angry at her, that's why she allows herself to be this doormat. Better to be the doormat than to have others be angry. And through the work that you do together in session, what also comes through is that underneath that fear of others being angry at her, she's got a warrior energy inside of her. She's got a woman warrior inside of her that's ready to be more expressed. And this woman warrior who knows how to set boundaries, who isn't scared of other people's anger. So by the end of the session, Melissa's saying this case study is about me. So by the end of the session, for sure, she says she gives herself some homework. And one of the action steps she gives herself for homework is for her to set boundaries with one of her close friends. Specifically, she's been lending a lot of money to this friend over the years, and the friend has never paid her back, even though she says she will. So she sets that homework for herself, that she's going to set a boundary with this friend around giving money. And then also she wants to set a boundary with her parents. She's been calling them every day because they're kind of needy and she doesn't want them to be upset. And she knows that that's not the right boundary for her. So she wants to move it to fewer times a week. And your client says that she has really decided that she wants to set both of these boundaries, both with confidence in her boundary, as well as with love for herself and for the other person, for her parents and for her friend. What other inner work homework might you give this client for her to go deeper and for her to integrate all that's come through in the session? I'm going to give you a couple minutes on this. What homework might you give this client for her to go deeper and integrate what's come through in the session? Okay. And I requested no chat last time. I'll say this time, if you just feel like you can't raise your hand, but you've got one that you want to share, put it in the chat. But I prefer voice to voice so we can kind of talk it through. Jolly.
So yeah, this one came to me pretty instantaneously, I guess because it speaks to me. Recently, my daughter brought home a like paper mache white mask that she had to work on. And what came to me was you would get, you know, they're like 10 for $12 on Amazon. So to take two of those paper mache masks, one would be the pleaser and one would be the warrior. And to really express the energies of those two parts of her in the mask. Yes. And then when she wants, you know, when it comes time to set a boundary, like her parents or whatever, she would intentionally put the pleaser mask away in a mm-hmm. box or in a mm-hmm. drawer mm-hmm. and take the warrior mask out and then proceed.
I love it. So beautiful, so powerful. I once actually did led a ritual with different masks. And so I'll also just toss another piece to add on to just the incredibleness that you just shared. She can also decorate each mask to infuse, you know, to even start to sit more deeply with like, what's the energy? What are some of the colors or the shapes of this one? And then big yes to everything that you said. Don't you just love the creativity that can come forward with this? And I hope also you're all seeing like how much we've all learned and what you're integrating through these homework, you know, assignments. Good. Ayana.
Yeah, I wrote a couple, but I see other hands, so I'll share one. Have her visualize and feel the, you know, take on being the warrior energy and visualize and feel the result that she wants. So not just visualize setting the boundaries with love, but visualize what result does she want from setting those boundaries with love? What kind of feeling does she want to have with her parents? What kind of feeling does she want to have in this financial situation with her friend? And have the warrior, you know, really feel into that, you know, and then can practice doing it, like, but first feeling the result of what these actions will get her.
Yes. Yes. And letting the warrior kind of lead the way on what's possible in those scenarios and feeling in through that lens and that archetypal energy. Beautiful. Yes. AJ.
Yeah, I was thinking about to come coming at it before the meetings with her friend and with her parents, to have a journaling session where she can get in touch with her higher self or warrior woman, and write about why it's important that she does this, how it is loving to herself and also to her people, and sort of how it will impact that relationship, what it might look like going forward.
Yeah, yes, I'd love it as like a tool to use right before the conversations. And what you're speaking to, AJ, and part of what Jolly was speaking to, and part of, like, even from the case study before, one of the things I want to just point out is this is about, a lot of this homework is about the difference between the breakthrough and the transformation. So much of the breakthrough of this warrior energy came through in the session, but we know that that's not enough to create long-lasting change, where the client really has this new energy for herself as she needs it. And so all of these beautiful exercises are also an example of now going persistently and consistently with the breakthrough, connecting back into that energy in order to have it more easily available for the client when they need it. Good. Deva.
Yeah, I feel like because she does have that great awareness already of doing a body practice. And so I've done one called Sorcery Passes, where you stand really grounded and I release the feeling of being a doormat. I release feeling insecure, whatever it is, 9 times to the left, and just like really shaking it out of the body. And then standing in that, and then I call in my inner warrior, call in strength, call in confidence and love, and to really, and then have a particular like stance that feels good. And then in that particular body stance, being connected to the earth and the elements, to state an affirmation, something of, I am a warrior, I honor my boundaries with love and confidence. And maybe repeat that 3 to 5 times to really feel the frequency field of what that energy feels like, and to clear the field on a body level.
I love that. I love that practice, and it integrates the body and movement and the releasing what no longer serves and the calling in what is. And again, even if some of that came up in the session, this is practice paving the neural pathways, feeling it in the body again, or in different ways, even just the speaking of the affirmations are paving those new neural pathways as well.
And maybe like to precede the body movement, to journal about it first. Like, what do you want to release? List 5 to 10 things to release, and then 5 to 10 things to call in, and then do the body practice.
Yeah, I love that. Preparing on the cognitive level first to go in. And then what I'd say is work from the journaling and the list, but also invite the client, like, and then whatever spirit moves you as you're in the process as well, if more comes through. Good. Brenda.
So I would ask that they look at the warrior and the pleaser and look at what needs were met by being the pleaser and surround that pleaser with love so that you're not shaming yourself for having done that. And then looking at what needs are going to be met by being the warrior and setting the boundaries with love and confidence. How, what needs will that meet? And then holding both and honoring and loving both and maybe bringing them together to combine them. I really like that exercise.
Yeah, I love it. I was going to say it reminds me a little bit of the coaching.
Yeah, I like that. It's the same thing.
Beautiful. Yeah, and then bringing that into a homework assignment. Yeah, very nicely done. Looking at the different needs and asking. And of course, you know, another piece that I just want to pull out from Brenda said that we know we've learned this, but it can just be underlined a million times. Even the parts that are, I don't know what we want to call them, not so savory, or that, you know, maybe we on the outset don't like the people pleaser or the doormat. We don't want to shame them. We don't want to not love them. We don't want to try to fix those parts. We don't even want to try to release the part, right? That's an essential energy inside of us. We want to honor it so that we can leverage it for its highest use. Good. Cecil.
Yeah, so I was thinking about the part that is scared of others being angry at her and asking what does the scared part need before and after putting the boundary? Mm-hmm. And also what does the scared part need when the most likely angry response comes?
Yes.
Because people get angry with boundaries. Yes. So, and it's the upholding of the boundaries that is also like, woo.
Yes. These are all so great. And I'm so glad that you're contributing this because the beforehand is so important.
Yeah.
But then what happens after? Whether you got the response you wanted or not, what do you need? What's the nervous system need?
Yeah.
You know, all of that. So it's good to for that. And that's part of the work that we do as coaches is kind of support future scenarios so like a client can know how to prepare for that.
Yeah.
Well, Amy.
I was also thinking kind of along these same lines about befriending anger and having her do like automatic writing about what she just might be angry about because yes. She is so afraid of other people's anger. She's probably repressed her own. Yes. If she's so against anger. So like nonstop writing for 3 minutes, like just let yourself be angry, feel that warrior, you know, cheering you on as you just write about what people might get angry about or what you might get angry about.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So well done. 100%. When we, almost 100% of the time, if we are scared of other people's anger and also like that pleaser doormat piece is there, it means that we've put our own anger in shadow and we've been pushing away that normal, natural, healthy energy of anger because we think it's a bad thing or a thing that is shameful or whatever it is. So supporting a client to start to come in flow and connection with that normal, natural part of themselves.
Good. Yeah, I like the term righteous anger, you know, that there's there's reasons to be angry and we can make it wrong, but there's actually really good reasons. Yeah.
Absolutely. Good. Annalise.
I would make her write down how the pleaser is going to act with her parents and a friend, what she would likely do, everything she would likely do, and how a friend and a parent would behave, and to connect to the feeling that she have with this behavior as the pleaser, and then write down how would the warrior behave with their friend and her parents and the feeling associated with this behavior, the value associated with the pleaser and the value associated with the warrior, and really connect to what makes her feel, obviously what makes her feel better is to be the warrior. So have that sort of like feeling as she writes ingrained in her, because that's the way she wants to feel. And so that neural path maybe goes from feeling to brain, and it's like almost a visualization to then, you know, choose to be in that way, having considered both options from a cognitive perspective and from an emotional perspective. And maybe also at the end, really ask what wants my higher self wanting to be.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I love it. And while, you know, 99.9% of the time, the client will probably choose the warrior, what's also just important for us, and we learned this in Befriend Your Fear too, like for, as practitioners, is the client also gets to say, you know what, I actually still need my pleaser too, right? And not like the what's important is creating, making an empowered decision versus like a default decision on it. Good. Kelly.
Yeah, I'm loving so much hearing all these different ideas. I had a couple of different things that came up that could flow together. And one was first just writing a letter of forgiveness and love for the pleaser, and then one of courage for the warrior, and basically writing a love letter to these different parts. And then in honoring of those parts, just looking at how do they come together. And then I love embodiment work of, I mean, I would love to guide someone through this, but as homework, to really feel into like, what's the posture of the pleaser? What does that feel like in her body? And what's the posture of the warrior? And what does that feel like in her body? And like, for me, if I were doing this myself, I would put on a specific music that feels to me like the pleaser music and the warrior music, but in preparation, like I'd love to do music and dance before I present or before I have a hard conversation. So the idea of just kind of like getting into the body and the energy of the warrior beforehand and like being able to really claim that, but also recognize that she has these other parts embodied as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those were a couple of the things that I had thought about. So.
Yeah. I love that. And what I want to pull on there is back to the kind of like rule that I mentioned earlier around time, like not too long and not too short. So I love that you mentioned the putting on the music, right? Because if we just say to a client, take a second on your own or take a few minutes on your own and feel the posture of the pleaser, and then take some time on your own and feel the posture of the warrior, they're going to take like 2 seconds and under on that. Like it's not a solid enough container on their own to get into the embodiment. So giving them a little more instruction and kind of like a more of a container to lean into, like a full song, is a great thing. Or take one walk around the block as the pleaser, and in the posture, how would the pleaser walk? And then take a walk around the block as the warrior. So we do want to think about like the setting the container with the time so that they can actually let it sink in.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Let me see if there's anything else. You guys are also great. Just a couple of other things that weren't mentioned. The client could draw the doormat too, or draw the warrior or a symbol for the warrior. On a more logistical or strategic level, to write a draft of what they're going to say to their friend or their parents, to just like really write that out from the warrior energy. To Cecil's point about tracking, you can invite the client to follow herself throughout the week and make a list of all of the times that she ignored a boundary because of the fear of making others angry, and then all the times she upheld boundaries or set boundaries. She could make a list of all the people she knows in her personal life, or superstars, or even from fiction, that are really good at setting boundaries in healthy ways. She could dialogue archetypally with one of those people too, to get wisdom from them. Yeah, I think everything else was covered. Okay. We've got a couple of minutes left. I'd love to hear what are you taking from our time together today? What are you taking from our time together today? Who wants to share? Brenda.
I love the creativity that everybody came up with all the different suggestions. It's like I'm writing them down going, oh my gosh, I hope these stay in my brain. I want to have this in front of me when I'm coaching so that I can think, oh, this would be good for this person.
Yes. Maybe. Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway.
Yeah, yes. And the creativity is there for homework. And then the creativity is there for in session time as well, right? Like, there's like sky's the limit on what we can bring to support a client to reach their goals and to connect more deeply with themselves. There's so many options and opportunities.
I really like the movement one with that Diva said about calling this in and letting this go. And I guess you let go first and then call in. But yeah, that was really cool. I love the movement ones.
Yes, agree.
Thank you.
Good. Who else? Seeing loving case studies in the chat. Carla's got lots of new journaling ideas. Ayana.
Yeah, it's usually pretty easy for me to come up with all kinds of things for a client or somebody else, you know, to do that's helpful. And it's amazing how often I forget myself when I do meditation and stretching and these different self-care things. But when it comes to dealing with these shadow parts and, you know, something where, you know, I can have a breakthrough in a moment and realize, oh, this part is really holding me back or causing, you know, this pain in my life. I have not been good at then following through with a daily, you know, journal and movement practice for those kinds of things in my personal life. And this conversation has definitely shown a light on that. And I can also see that I would emanate a different energy when I'm helping other people if I'm giving that to myself first, you know, if I've embodied doing that. Because I think that sometimes when I tell other people or suggest, if they're asking my suggestions and I suggest things, I can feel there's some part of me that thinks, yeah, they're probably not going to do that because I'm not.
Yes. Yeah. I'm so glad you're bringing all of this up. So yes, like I hope everyone is taking inspiration to go deeper with your own self-work in these ways. And then, it is for ourselves first and foremost, but it actually does help us become better practitioners for lots of different reasons when we have these containers for ourselves and for our soul work. AJ saying in the chat, it feels like I have a lot of ideas, but struggle with articulating any one idea into a succinct assignment or prompt. Do you want to come on with that for a moment, AJ?
Yeah, sure.
So tell me a little bit more about that.
I felt it when I was sharing a little bit earlier that it just flowed one thing into the next and didn't really form before I was speaking out loud. I know that that happens with me, that I do process in the middle of speaking, but I think I'm feeling like I need some almost templates for forming a good journaling question.
So, okay, a couple things in that. First, just to work backwards in terms of template for forming a good journaling question, go back to our questioning module, because mm-hmm. it applies for, and you have, and you don't need it. That's the other thing I want to say, like, you have it inside of you, AJ. I don't actually think you need to go back. I really think you have it inside of you. And I think the, like, the bigger thing that I'll toss, and you can tell me how this lands, is what I want for you is to trust your process and honor your process. So it's okay if you form it as you're sharing it with a client. Like, what you shared with us, your idea was amazing and incredible. And that's fine if you form it as you're sharing it. And sometimes, whether it's in session or whether it's for a homework piece, if I'm not sure as I start saying it to a client, I might say, I'm kind of forming this as I'm sharing it, and let's create this together. You know, I'm going to kind of like toss some things. They might make sense. And then let's come up together with what the best assignment is for you. We'll use this as a starting point, like, just normalize it and own it and honor. This is how your beautiful brain works and brings the brilliance and the impact out into the world. How does that land?
That was very nice. It lands pretty true for me. I feel like I am doing that already, with sort of accepting and honoring and speaking it as I go, letting people know that I'm not, yeah, I'm not maybe gonna get it on the first try.
And then, like, leveraging that actually for their benefit, so that it's a co-creation.
Yeah. Good. I have another question I'll put in the Facebook group.
Okay. Awesome. Thanks. Yeah. And last piece, Amy's saying in the chat, and I think this is important, I often get my best ideas after a session, and we'll send homework afterwards. Same with me. You know, sometimes I'll say to a client, you know what, I'm going to email you tomorrow, because there's some, like, questions that I think will be really great for you for journaling or some assignments, but I need some moments to collect my thoughts. Right. And then I'll just email them afterwards. So your homework is for yourself. If you want to start or restart or go deeper into your own soul work journaling, that is the invitation. And then in terms of practitioner, to think about, you know, to, like, take a little time at the end of sessions or after sessions, if you're going to email afterwards, and see how you can go deeper with homework to pave the integrate what's come through in sessions. Enjoy. And I will see you all very soon. Have a great rest of your day.